Welcome to the Business Growth Podcast with me, Kevin Miller. On this podcast, you're going to hear some awesome interviews from business leaders, experts, and entrepreneurs as they share their story, their journey, and some expert tips and insight of the things they've learned along the way. So sit back, enjoy, learn, and grow. And thanks for joining me. And I'm delighted to be joined in the studio this morning with Rick Hart. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning, Kevin. How are you?
Yeah,
good morning,
wonderful.
Listeners.
Yes, yeah, wonderful. And Rick, we were talking off air there, and we've got a bit of common ground. You said your grandmother's from Edinburgh as well.
Indeed, yes, yes. We've lost the accent along the way, but it was a long time ago, that one.
Before you come in, we're doing a little bit of a Sean Connery, tribute, playing some movie music and stuff. So we've had some good requests come over. So it's been a good fun morning, actually.
And I believe he was from your hometown, was he?
Yes, that's right. So I was, as we were saying off air, I'm from Edinburgh. Sean Connery was from Edinburgh as well. Played football for the local small team, which is Bonnyrigg Rose. So if you're listening in the UK in Bonnyrigg, hopefully you are at maybe 2 in the morning. But good morning, and yeah, Bonnyrigg Rose. Shout out to Bonnyrigg Rose. So look, Rick, we better cut to some business talk, and it's great that you've come in to share your story, and I'm very grateful for that. So thanks very much.
Pleasure to be here, Kevin.
Look, you've been in business in Perth in the electrical appliances game for over 35 years. A long time. And tell us how you've managed to sustain that and be around for so long.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. It's actually more than 40 years now, Kevin. So it's a long time. It's funny that I've ended up in the electrical industry, because I started my working life in the liquor industry.
Big difference.
Yeah, and I worked in that for about 13 years as a youngster. And probably that's where my desire to go into retail emanated from, and I was keen to get into that. But for various reasons, it didn't sort of work out. And just an opportunistic thing happened to me back in about 1975, when we had a friend who was an insurance assessor, and he tipped us off that there was a container of damaged refrigerators that had arrived on the Fremantle Wharf and got belted around at sea and weren't suitable for the buyer. So they said, look, put in a tender and you might get these. And together with a partner at the time, we decided that we'd put in a bid for the fridges and we'd just sell them on the weekends and try and make a bit of pocket money. So that's where all that sort of started from.
So it's really started with maybe a bit of luck and a bit of opportunity then, I guess?
Well, it's just one of those opportunities that comes along, and as we expand on it, we started selling them just through the classified ads on a Sunday, and when we sold 3 or 4 of them, we put them on the back of a ute and deliver them. And in that piece of time, a lot of people said to us, we'd really love to be able to buy this sort of stuff around the area. There's nothing for us to do. So we sort of had a bit of a look at the map and decided that Osborne Park was a pretty good area and was uncatered for with appliances. So it sort of led to us opening a retail store back then.
And how long after you sort of started doing you selling the initial stock, how long after that did you actually think, they need to make the next step? What was the period of time?
Yeah, good question. I think the next period of time from memory was probably just a few months later, and we decided to expand on not only selling, we still had some of the fridges left, not only selling them, but we brought in a range of other refrigerators. We brought in air conditioners. My partner was at the time into air conditioning, so he knew a bit about that. And also, interestingly, colour TV had just been introduced to Australia. So that gave us an instant market for that as well. So all of a sudden, we're up and running with a retail store in the heart of Osborne Park.
And I guess, listening to you, there was a little bit of timing as far as TVs are concerned. There's a new product to market, and I guess you're in that position at that stage where you're fortunate to actually be around that timing and that happening when you needed it most, I guess.
Yeah. Timing's a wonderful thing, you know, and particularly in retail, timing is probably one of the greatest attributes, you know, that if you can, it's always difficult to time it right, but if it can sort of link in with what you're doing, it's really good.
So you got the insurance tip off early in the piece and you had your business partner, and obviously you took the punt on it, really. You know, there's some people that might have had the same opportunity and deciding not to do it, but you've actually done it. You've actually got off your backside and said, "Now we're going to do it and follow through on it." And
yeah,
what that's a mentality. But just like trying to go back a bit, Rick, just for the early stages. So you said you were involved in the liquor,
yep.
The liquor game, I guess.
Yep.
And you're from Meriden. You're from the Wheat Belt.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So can you tell me a bit more about the sort of early stages of, you know, living in Meriden, living in the Wheat Belt, and then being involved in the liquor game, and then, you know, how it sort of transformed to having the confidence to even take a punt on something like that?
Yeah, all right. Well, there's a bit of a story as that as well. So I grew up in Meriden, as you said, and in a farming family, farming community. My dad also, for a time, had a general store just out of Meriden, so that was sort of probably my first taste of retail, I guess. And then, you know, all the while at high school, that I completed year 12 at Meriden High School, and at that time I wanted to be a journalist, and I was really keen on being a journalist, and sort of went through that process. But I found out that nearly every other kid in Perth wanted to be a journalist as well, so it was a pretty hard road. My second choice was to join one of the old country stock agents like Dalgetty's, West Farmers, Elders, those sort of things that were very prominent in country areas then. So that was my second choice, which was designed to get me back to the country. But as it happened in the training regime that I undertook with Dalgetty's that I ended up joining, I ended up in their wine and spirits or their liquor side of things. So by that time, I'd also had a bit of a taste of Perth, and I said, gee, this is probably a bit better than country life. So I became a city slicker pretty quickly.
The big city sort of thing,
yeah,
isn't it?
Big city came to light.
The interesting thing for me listening is the family business thing at the beginning, you know, because that's always that's something that we had Dale Alcock in as well, and he has a very similar background to yourself from the Wheat Belt as well, and involved in a family business at a very early age.
Yeah.
And I think being around that environment, you just being around people that are working for themselves and working in an environment, doing the hours, working hard, there's so many values and so many things that you can pick up at a young age being around that.
Yeah, I think you're right. That's something that emanates with me now, that just that, I didn't know it at the time, but just that little taste of family business and the independence that it gave my mum and dad at the time, and they were continually into little businesses and so on from there on afterwards. So I guess that sort of instilled me with a bit of a desire to go into business for myself. And I think all the time that I worked in the liquor industry with Dalgetty's, or certainly the last part of it, I was keen to always get into business for myself.
And it's the family business thing, really. It's so important. I mean, the amount of small businesses that now just in, you know, all of Australia, really, that are just small family businesses, they all start off somewhere and everybody starts off at that level. And fortunate, you know, people like yourself, fortunately, have grown businesses over a period of time. But just learning the basics in that environment, it's so valuable and so important. It's really interesting to hear, because I'm from a small town myself, and I feel very much like that myself when I relate to family values and business values. I think they're very much the same. You know, there's what to do, you know, what not to say, what to say, how to do things properly, how to treat people properly. And it's, you know, it's just really interesting to hear that's your background as well, Rick, to be honest. With the liquor store then, so just, was that retail as well? Was that an early introduction?
No, that was wholesale, but pathway was going to be into retail, and that's where I sort of wanted to go. But anyway, it didn't, and this opportunity came along, and so we went into a completely different industry. But it's interesting what you say about family values and business values, and they are intertwined, you know, and it's often said that small business is the lifeblood of the Australian economy, and it probably is, because there's, you know, hundreds upon thousands of people that are willing to have a go and set up their small business in whatever it is.
But I think any business owner, certainly someone at your level, you would always tell someone to have a go, wouldn't you? You'd encourage people to have a go and see what happens and see what it takes them.
Well, there are so many opportunities. You know, even today there are opportunities abound, you know, and you you just read all the stories of people that have taken opportunities of the online environment and what that offers, and people that have started businesses and sort of, you know, become millionaires overnight almost. Yeah. You know? So there's plenty of opportunity for people. And I'm always very encouraging of people that want to get into business and take that pathway.
Yeah, no, that's great advice, Rick, really. And so moving forward then, so we learn a bit about your background, and you come down to Perth, the big city, as we say, and you do, you know, you get the fridges from the insurance tip-off. And then what's the early stages of that like? So you mentioned that you're driving around yourself, delivering the fridges back in the day, you're selling them. So could you tell me a bit more about the early days of business for you in Perth?
Yeah, it was a pretty lean machine back then. We had to do most of the work ourselves. And we sort of started off small and kept pretty small for about 2 or 3 years. And then we opened another store. So we had 2 stores and we sort of looked after 1 each. And that didn't really work out too good. So the partnership dissolved after about 3 or 4 years. And we both went our separate ways. And I took the store that was over in Wanneroo Road. And we went through a fair amount of difficulty in trying to sort out the partnership and all that sort of stuff. And unfortunately, my original partner went broke in a short period of time, which left Osborne Park vacant again. So so I sort of decided that it'd be pretty smart to get back to Osborne Park. So in about 1980, we invented the Rick Hart name, and prior to that it was called Northern Discounts. So from 1980, we're back in Osborne Park and started a new concept of almost a warehouse direct type of retail outlet, which became, you know, it's hard to say overnight success, but it was pretty successful pretty quickly. So,
yeah, no, it's interesting. That's basically within, so 1975 to 1980, it's 5 years. You know, it's a quick 5 years of doing the hard yards, and growing to have a brick and mortar store, or having more than one bricks and mortar store, I guess.
Yeah, well, we went back to one in 1980, and interestingly, a lot of people don't know this, but I was also a racing bookmaker from about the late 70s right through till I did it for about 13 years. And, you know, that was – I sort of concentrated on that probably more than I did on the business. I employed someone to look after the business and I just sort of sat over the top of it. So I did that for 13 years. And then as that industry started to sort of decline a bit in terms of bookmakers anyway, with the advent of course, TABs and corporate bookmakers and so on, I could see that was going to get pretty hard. So I thought, well, there's an opportunity here to concentrate on the retail business. So in 1992, I gave back my license for bookmaking, and that started an expansion period of the Rick Hart business. So actually from 1980 to 1992, we just had one store.
Yeah,
okay. 92, we got another one, and 93, 95. So it grew eventually to, I think, 18 stores in the finish. So.
Yeah, well, I'd really like to know about that process, because that's a big jump for someone to go from, you know, a container of product, selling it, maybe, you know, selling it from the car park, I guess, at the time, and then selling it for, and then delivering it yourself through to actually having a store and having many stores with staff and challenges. So, could you talk us through that sort of process from that point onwards?
Yeah. I think what we did once we decided that we wanted to see more stores, we had a really busy store in Osborne Park by about 1990. We were so busy that we really couldn't sort of handle any more customers. So we decided that we needed to have other outlets. And it's about a lot of this development is about opportunity. And recognizing the market and seeing where those opportunities exist. So fortuitously, a store came up in Rockingham in about 1992. So we bought that as an existing store, which sort of gave us access to that area of the demographic. And then we opened another store in Canning Vale, which was sort of south of the river, gave us north of the river, south of the river, and then the Rockingham region. So that was about sort of geographically placing the stores so that you could take best advantage of the market. And from there on, it was it was always a considered approach. It wasn't about saying, oh, we need to have 10 or 12 or 18 stores. It was about as opportunities came up.
Yeah.
So,
and is that opportunity as far as the location that you're referring to more so?
Yeah, it's location, recognising the need for something in the area. It's nice going into an area if there's a whole lot of other retailers there that are sort of already catering for it, because then you're just sort of trying to pinch a bit of their business, and it's not so where you see a gap in the market. And that's what my philosophy has been probably in all of those years is to identify gaps in the market. And that's not only with location, it's about the products that you sell. And we've always specialised in an area. I recognise right from the early days that there was nobody really concentrating on kitchen cooking packages.
Yes.
So that's the area that we really concentrated on.
So, and you used the word a considered approach. So basically not going, you know, I guess it can be easy when there is a lot of opportunity or a lot of, you're successful, you're feeling that success. I guess it can be easy for you as a business owner to say, right, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that and get caught up in the moment. But you have to take stock and be evaluate things is really what you're saying as far as a considered approach.
Absolutely, yep.
And look for that need and look for that opportunity and not be hasty then. Is that what, that's really what you're saying?
Yeah, I think that's really important. And you really need to do a viability study on whatever business that you're looking at. You need to know what it's capable of producing. You know, you can't say, oh, I'm going to open up a shop selling, you know, whatever it is, eggs or something. if the market is not there, you know, yeah. It's
that's
it's,
that general store. Actually, going back to that general store back in Meredith.
They sell a bit of everything. But, yeah, look, most important, my advice to anyone going into business is you need to know what your business is capable of delivering to you in terms of revenue.
Yep.
And you need to know exactly what the costs are. You need to be careful of entering into leases that are too onerous. And then you can decide whether you know, in our case, we decide whether the area or the location that's been identified was capable of delivering sufficient revenue to cover what the costs were of setting it up.
Yeah, and it's interesting what you're saying about evaluating and, you know, doing the viability study and understanding the finances. Some business owners, and I'm not sure, I'd like to know a bit more about your experience, but some business owners, they might not have the skills to actually be able to do that. And when they're going through that process, they may not have the skills, as I mentioned, to actually understand the viability and to understand the opportunity. So from someone like yourself, do you feel that you had those skills, or did you reach out for assistance from professionals and other people?
There weren't a lot of places to reach out to in those days, and a lot of people ask if I had a mentor, and I didn't really have a mentor, but I was an inveterate reader of business newspapers and newsletters and all that sort of thing. And there was a particular newsletter that I got very fond of in the early 80s, which sort of guides you in business principles a bit.
Yep.
But then outside of that, I think I had the skills, sort of, I was good at numbers and all that sort of thing. So I had the skills to sort of identify what was likely to come out of a particular area, you know, in the way of whatever the demographic was, whatever the requirements were that we had. I think the biggest problem that I see with a lot of small businesses is that they go in with a desire to do something, but without having done the research to sort of check out.
Yeah.
And these days there's a lot of organisations in small business that can help people with that sort of pathway.
Yeah, and listening to you, I hear that you were constantly learning. You were,
oh, absolutely.
And you were looking for a means to learn as well. And as you said yourself, back then there might not have been as many opportunities or platforms to actually to do the learning. Now we're in a position where you can find information at your fingertips, really.
Absolutely. That's the big difference right now. And, you know, and that's the advice I would give people is seek that information which is really at your fingertips, as you say.
You know, you looked for the opportunities. You took a considered approach to the growth and the viability of growing the business in the actual stores themselves, in the actual presentation of the stores, in the actual staffing, the systemizing of the stores. What was the process for you in that instance? How did you learn about it? How did you structure it in the early days? What was the thought process?
Yeah, that's interesting because you can imagine when we started, there were no computers. There were no, it was all paperwork. And I can remember I was probably one of the first businesses to get involved in a computerized stock system, which It was one of the very old, it was a Tandy computer, and it had those old floppy, you wouldn't even remember, mate, those old floppy disks that used to
I remember floppy disks. I do remember floppy disks.
And so we ended up having a stock control system, but it wouldn't do invoices or anything like that. So there's been a lot of development over the years in getting things systemized and getting things really, nowadays you can push a button and get information right out, whereas back in those days we had to bundle it all up in a pile of paper and send it to the accountant and try and get a result.
Can you remember any things that happened? I mean, the computer thing's a big change. Can you remember that transition? Can you remember, was it stressful, the transition? Was there initial teething problems?
Yeah, it was, because, interestingly, by the time we got to our peak with the 18 stores, which is probably about, by that time, early 2000s, we had something like 300-odd staff. So the biggest problem that you always have with introducing new systems and new computers and all that sort of thing is that people are resistant to change. So it's always a bit of a challenge as far as that's concerned. But we've seen a lot, in terms of computers. These days the computer systems are amazing, what they can deliver to you.
I can tell you enjoyed that because you were smiling when you were talking. I can tell you enjoyed that journey of the first store and you setting it up and the challenges of it and the rewards it brings, but you meet the people you meet and the experiences that you get. I can, like, you were smiling as you're talking to me. I can tell that you really enjoyed that.
Yeah, no, look, I've enjoyed the whole ride. It's been amazing. And we've had, as I said, 300 odd employees, many of whom are still in the industry. That we sort of created. And we had an occasion last year. I think it was last year, the year before, where we had a charity night in one of our warehouses for an industry young guy who'd been diagnosed with cancer and was going through a bit of a hard time. So the whole industry came together, all of our opposition, all of our suppliers and all that all came together to have this big charity night to raise some funds for him. And when I looked around the room, I saw people that worked for Harvey Norman and Good Guys and all that, and they'd all come from our business way back. So that's sort of very rewarding that you've actually created a career for people. So
And it's a competitive landscape, but you mentioned a few of your competitors there, but I'm sure you're still, you're still friendly with some of these people as well that have been involved in the competitive industry as well.
Yeah, you are. You've got to work together with, it's healthy to have opposition. Everyone always tells you that. We always try and do better than them, but at the end of the day, you need to have.
Did you know at the beginning that you would end up with the 18 stores and 300 people?
No idea. No.
You don't set out knowing that, do you?
No,
I guess
you don't. It just evolves over time, and you get to a stage, and then in 2005, by the time we'd got to our peak, we had 18 stores. We had a turnover of about $150 million a year. And then you get to a stage and say, God, where do we go now? What do you do? What's the next step?
What's the step,
And then it was, because you sort of just can't – every time you open a store, it's a costly exercise, capital investment-wise. So that's why I sold the Rick Hart business back in 2005 into a company in Victoria that ended up public listing. That was my sort of exit from that to say, well, we're up. You as a private company, you can't take it any further because of the capital required. Yeah. So the logical step was to get involved with somebody and try and make something of it that way.
So it kind of came to a natural conclusion for you then?
It did. So in 2005, I sold it to Clive Peters. I worked with them. I had a three-year contract to work with them. I ended up doing 4 years, and then something went wrong with their business, and I sort of exited that and started another business called Kitchen Headquarters, which was in 2010.
Because I think that's probably a thing that a lot of business owners would struggle with. When you get to a certain level, it's knowing when to stop as well.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
And I get, is there signs like for you? You mentioned the capital, so for you, there's tells that says you know the investment's out with our the investment's not worth it at this point now, or family life might be deteriorating. So there's things that probably that can raise that to happen maybe quicker than it should, or raise it naturally to happen.
Yeah. I call it like a merry-go-round. You got to know when to jump off.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. It's perfect. It's a perfect analogy. Get off before you be sick.
Exactly. So it's I don't know that anyone knows exactly the right time, but there are signs, you know, that you just say, well, you know, where's this business going to go? And often it's the exit part is to sell and let someone else take it to the next stage.
Get off that merry-go-round when it feels right and when you know there's the right time to do it, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's right. And it's a difficult thing for people with businesses because you get so ingrained in them and so consumed by what's going on. Sometimes you're not aware of, you know, and that's where some businesses collapse because, you know, people just don't know where that point of no return is.
One thing, talking about moving on and talking about the sort of things that you moved into, one thing that interests me is the Dockers and being the president of the Dockers. You were 8 years you did that.
Yes, I was, yeah. So I was approached towards the end of 2001 to join the Dockers board. They weren't in a very good state back then. In 2001, they'd won one or two games in that year. They were really struggling. They'd run out of money. The pot was bare down there.
Is that why they came here for the money?
And it wasn't looking too bright. But anyway, eventually they asked me to be chairman. And I thought, oh, my God. And I went away and thought about it. And I thought, well, the old rule, someone has to do it.
Yes.
I thought I could probably add some value to them, help them through their predicament. And so I joined in early 2002. And spent 8 seasons with the Dockers over that time. Managed to get them into a pretty healthy financial position during that period of time with the help of some really good people around the place, and got them into their first final in 2003, first preliminary final in 2006. Yeah. And you know, whilst there were some hard yards there, particularly in the early days, and you know, it was really 8 years of an enjoyable time, you know.
And you're a Dockers fan, you said, off air.
I love the Dockers. I've been there since, I think, when they started in 95, we took up a small sponsorship with them and continued that on all the way through. So I've been through the roller coaster ride that is the Fremantle Dockers for a long, long period of time. And, you know, I've enjoyed the ups and downs. And we've always said about Fremantle, you never know what you're going to get. And there are some great memories with them.
That's what interests me the most, Rick, actually, is because it's an organisation at the end of the day, isn't it? Sport and teams, their organisations, business, their organisations. And there's the reason that you were approached back in the day. Is that more as for guidance and structure and for, you know, for a strategy? Is that why somebody would approach, you know, someone like yourself?
Yeah, I think so. Back in those days, so in the early days of AFL, I don't think they sort of got it as to the fact that it was a business and it was more of a club, you know, with no disrespect to anyone beforehand. But I think it needed to be structured more like a business, and it needed to be the governance just needed to be a lot stronger than what it was, financial management, all that sort of thing. And then sort of dividing off the, you know, the playing side of it, they've got their own division that needed to be given the funding to look after them and make sure they performed at the best level. Because regardless of what you do at the back end, if the front end's not performing, then you don't get the revenue streams that come with that.
And that's the same as business, isn't it?
It is very much the same, yeah.
You know, if you're not, you know, at the front end, in your instance, retail, if you're not performing at the front, you're not getting the results at the back end as well.
Absolutely, yeah.
And what was the remit for you then? So they approached you and what's the proposal? Do they say at that point, you know, we need guidance, we need structure, or, you know, what's the sort of request?
Well, I think the request came as a result of a fair bit of frustration that the, you know, the way that the whole business was structured just wasn't workable.
Yeah.
So we just needed to go and pull it apart, get the right people into the club to make sure that it had its best opportunity of delivering whatever it could. The big revenue streams for football clubs, or I guess for any club, is sponsorship revenue, members revenue, and game day revenue. So if you're not successful, sponsors are hard to get.
Yep,
if you're not successful, members don't want to join. And if you're not successful, then your game day attendances will be pretty ordinary. And that's what they were going through at that time. So you almost had to sort of start it from day one and say, right, well, how can we address each of these things? And I can remember starting with, we did a whole lot of work studies and so on. We had a lot of help from some of the guys from the AFL, a young guy that came along is now the Gil McLaughlin, CEO of the AFL, and he was there as a junior.
So you taught him, that's what you're saying.
Oh, yeah, taught him all he knows. So they all helped us put it together, and getting to the point of the story is that we targeted getting 28,000 members. At the time, they had about 16,000. We targeted getting 28,000, so we managed to do that within a couple of years, and, of course, now they're pushing towards 50,000, I think, so.
Yeah, it's brilliant, and it's, again, it's the parallels, isn't it, between business and sporting organisations. They're very much, you're growing an organisation, you're growing finances, you're growing the success, you're growing the structure, the systems. There's a lot of things that that they can draw parallels between.
Yeah, and it's all interlocked, much the same as business. You know, if you know your success is really important, so that's why, you know, all sporting clubs strive for success, because if you can get to that level of success that shows people that you're serious about it, then the rest sort of follows along.
And you had some fun along the way, as you say.
Oh, a lot of fun. Met some wonderful, wonderful people. It's a great industry. I also had a strong involvement in administration with what's now called Perth Racing, horse racing. So I was vice chairman when I was approached. I was vice chairman of Perth Racing. So I sort of, you know, I'm aware of sports administration, but footy just sort of takes it to another level. You know, everyone helps each other. And when we were really struggling in the first year, we had a lot of help from other AFL presidents, you know, particularly guys like Eddie Maguire. Couldn't do enough for us to help us raise funds and so on.
No, look, it's been really interesting, Rick, and it's obviously, you know, you've provided some awesome content for the small business owners, and I'm really appreciative of your time. Thanks very much.
Pleasure.
One last question. What do you enjoy doing nowadays? What do you enjoy doing in your spare time, and where do you find some more fun now?
Well, as we probably haven't covered, but I'm just getting back in the saddle again and starting with a brand new business called Hart & Co. So that's back in the original premises in Osborne Park. So that's been taking up a fair amount of my time at the moment. Outside of that, that's been a great project. You know, we've rejuvenated the old premises to be a fantastic showroom. So that'll be it's available now for people to see, but we'll officially launch the promotion probably middle of November. Outside of business, which is my great passion, and next probably comes the Fremantle Dockers. Horse racing is a good one, but golf, which is, you know, quite a dichotomy. It's either very good or very bad. So I've got plenty of things. And then, of course, family with wife and children and grandchildren and so on. So there's plenty to keep me going.
Well, look, Rick, it's been absolutely brilliant having you, and I'm really appreciative of your time, as I say, and great to hear that you're back on the merry-go-round again.
Yes. Well, been a pleasure to chat to you, Kevin, and I hope that your listeners could get something out of it, and I wish all small business owners all the best for whatever they're doing.
Thanks very much, Rick. Thanks for joining me on this episode of the Business Growth Podcast. If you enjoyed it and you want to come back for more, don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, or wherever it is you get your podcasts. You can catch up with me on social media on Facebook at Make My Business Better, Instagram at Business Growth AU, or you can jump on our website www.businessgrowthperth.com.au. See you next time. Would you dance if I asked you to dance? Would you run and never look back? Would you cry if you saw me crying?
Would you save my soul? I touched your lips. Would you laugh? Oh, please tell me this. Now would you die for the one you love? Hold me in your arms tonight. I can be your hero, baby. I can kiss away the pain. I will stand by you forever. You can take my breath away. Would you swear that you'll always be mine? Would you lie? Would you run and hide? Am I in too deep? Have I lost my mind?